Father, mother, ever dear, I'm your unworthy son. I seat myself to tell you of the ground we have won.
Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. The song you're hearing now is Do Not Borrow Trouble by the Madison-based folk duo Count This Penny. While the tune is original, the words are actually about 150 years old. They're the sentiments of a Wisconsin soldier writing home from the battlefields of the Civil War. The letter is currently housed at the Wisconsin Historical Society's Civil War collection, and from that vast archive of more than 11,000 letters by Wisconsin soldiers comes the new compilation, This Wicked Rebellion, Wisconsin Civil War Soldiers Write Home. It's edited by John Zim, with a foreword by Michael Edmonds, deputy director of the Society's Library Archives. Zim joined us from Madison and tells Lake Effect Stephanie Lecce that these letters had previously been collected and preserved by one Edwin B. Quiner and his daughters during and after the war.
All of the letters come from one collection. We call them the Quiner scrapbooks. They are newspaper letters that Edwin Quiner had his daughters clip out of newspapers. See, Quiner was the secretary for the governor at the beginning of the war. And when the war broke out, he subscribed to every paper from Wisconsin that he could. And he and his daughters clipped out the letters that they could find that were written to by soldiers to their families and put them in these scrapbooks. And Quiner later used those to write his Military History of Wisconsin, which came out after the war. So he assembled altogether 10 volumes of these letters. There are about 10 to 11,000 of them, and donated them to the Society in 1867.
And so how did you go through these thousands upon thousands of letters to decide which would be included in this collection?
Luckily, these were digitized and put on the Society website in PDF format a few years ago. So I basically sat at a computer flipping through PDFs and reading, you know, all 10 volumes.
Why was it important for you to present the letters from the soldiers as they were written rather than include them in some sort of history that you wrote and then included quotes from them?
The soldiers can write about this in a way that we can't. You know, they didn't know what was going to happen. And, you know, that uncertainty comes through quite a lot. And their own voices, I think, tell the story probably better, you know, than a lot of us, you know, certainly better than I can. You know, they were there, they were involved, they saw all these details that, you know, sometimes we kind of forget about, you know, talking about things like sewing kits and earthquakes. And there's a clipping about living through a flood in their camp. You know, since being there and experiencing it themselves, you know, they read about it, you know, much more personally and, you know, with that uncertainty.
As you were going through and collecting which letters would be featured in this Wicked Rebellion, were there individual pieces that stood out to you, specific details that made you think, oh, yes, this needs to be included?
Yeah. In fact, the second clipping, I think, to me is probably my favorite. It's very short, the second clipping in the book, talking about a husband who was saying goodbye to his family as his regiment was leaving. And his child, who's a three-year-old girl, puts her arms around her dad's neck and starts sobbing and won't let him go. And I have a son who's, you know, a little older than that. And, you know, I read this and I was really affected by it, thinking, you know, what would I do in this same situation? And, you know, those sorts of things that I think that remove the distance between us and the soldiers and, you know, shows they're not that different from us. And that, you know, make us look inward and think, you know, what would I do in this situation? Those really stood out. And also, you know, ones that showed how people, you know, soldiers, and, you know, there are some clippings from women at home who were trying to deal with life while so many men were gone. Accounts that, you know, showed a lot of the situations, the difficulties that they faced that their previous life really probably didn't prepare them for.
There's one great letter I know that kind of admonishes the men who are left behind, the men who have not gone to war, to say, you know, don't look upon these women as they chop their own wood, lend a hand, help them out. And I thought that was so interesting that there were kind of these appeals that, you know, these women were pretty much left behind to do everything.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, a lot of times I've put them in the situation of having to depend on people and depend on promises. There's another letter where a soldier is writing about the poor treatment his wife received trying to get medicine for his child. You know, talking about the promises this one storekeeper had made before the war. And when it came time to live up to that, he wasn't there for her. You know, he sent her away without medicine for her child. Difficult circumstances for him to try and navigate.
Some of the other really fascinating details that are revealed in these letters are about camp life and what it was like for these soldiers as they were training and as they were waiting to be sent out into the battlefields. You know, some of the boredom and also some of the mischief that they got into. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I think I said in the preface to the book that we could have had a whole book of letters that were written while men were on picket duty alone, when they had time to write. Some of my favorite clippings are about that. You know, what do you do when you have all this time on your hands? There was right from the get-go in Wisconsin, you know, there were troops getting in a little bit of mischief, trying to get alcohol from a brewery in town and getting shot at by the brewery owner. And then, you know, of course, the boredom, or, you know, doing the same thing day after day, waking up, being drilled, having lunch, being drilled again, doing the same monotonous things over and over, you know, really wore on the men.
There's also a great exchange in one of the letters where they're talking about one soldier on picket line who is pretty much across the way from a rebel soldier, and they're shouting back and forth to each other across the way, talking about what kind of food they have, and eventually they go and exchange a newspaper and some tobacco. And I just thought, you know, and they kind of cordially shake hands, and I thought, that's so revealing that these men in certain instances were just men, were just neighbors.
Right, yeah. And under other situations, they would have been good friends. And, you know, to go from that to being combatants on another day of the week is, you know, really incredible.
What about the battles? How did the men write about the experiences that they were having once they were actually in the thick of things?
Those really, throughout the clippings, would run the gamut from, you know, very short letters to, like, a soldier writing to his family saying, just to say that I'm okay. A lot of times they didn't want to get into details about the battle, especially if writing to wife or parents, you know, not wanting to worry the family back at home. But then there are others that are, you know, long, very descriptive of what went on the battlefield. One of my favorites is from a doctor who wrote that at the beginning of the war, he wanted to see a battle, and he was, you know, really enthusiastic about, you know, seeing what it was like. After being through one battle, he said he'd seen enough of it to last him a lifetime and never wanted to again. You know, so, you know, there's a big variety in what they would write home about. Another one that comes to mind is after the Battle of Shiloh, a soldier is writing, and he talks about how beautiful the battlefield is, and, you know, how he's sitting on a tree that was cut off by a cannonball. And, you know, to talk about details like that after something so terrible had happened was kind of revealing.
I also found it interesting how the reputation of the Iron Brigade is slowly revealed through some of these letters as they go through the big battles that these Wisconsin soldiers faced.
Yeah, it was really a very short period of time. I was really excited to find that one. There's one clipping where it talks about, you know, Bronner's Farm to South Mountain to Antietam, and you know, describing, you know, bit by bit, almost like building a house, how first they stood up to Stonewall Jackson and then, you know, really made a name for themselves at South Mountain. And, you know, all that took place in about a month's time, I believe it was, in the autumn of 1862.
Of course, some of the most interesting and revealing letters were about slavery and what was at the heart of this whole conflict. And again, the letters that the men were writing home and into newspapers really ran the gamut. Can you talk a little bit about some of the variety in thought and feeling about the slavery issue?
Sure. That was probably, I think, one of the most intense chapters to try and assemble, because Wisconsinites really had a variety of opinions, you know, as revealed in their letters in the Quiner collection. Because just because somebody wanted slavery to end didn't mean that they wanted African Americans living next to them or being equal to them. And so one of my favorite letters in that chapter talks about how there's a soldier who's watching an army of freed slaves following the regular army in Tennessee, and almost has like a Damascus Road sort of experience where you can feel his mind changing as he's writing about how, you know, these poor people with very little to their names are still yearning for freedom, working really hard to get away from slavery. And he realizes that, you know, under their skin beat human hearts, and that they might have some notions about freedom that were wrong, that, you know, that they would have plenty to eat and it wouldn't be cold, but that they had a really difficult road ahead of them. And it was, you know, I thought it was really powerful, showing how, you know, most of these soldiers hadn't seen a black person before they went to the war. And, you know, they at first were wanting just to preserve the Union, and, you know, coming into contact with slavery really kind of brought the issue to the forefront for a lot of them. There's another clipping where one of the soldiers realizes, you know, hey, the South, their men are out fighting the war and back at plantations. Slaves are planting, harvesting, and doing all this work that's helping out the South. So if for a purely military matter, slavery ought to be ended.
Of course, there were then those who felt quite differently, including after the Emancipation Proclamation was put forth, that they felt that they did not agree with that strategy.
Right, right. A lot of the men didn't get into the war, too, and slavery, and were quite offended at the thought of becoming an army of freedom or an, you know, army of emancipation. There was also a lot of uncertainty about what do we do with African Americans who want to fight for the Union, and, you know, what kind of troops would they make? Wisconsin soldiers had, you know, plenty to say about that as well. And there are multiple letters where Wisconsin soldiers said, you know, hey, anybody who's willing to help out and defeat our enemy is more than welcome. And they found that, you know, the troops, the African Americans that were in the army, proved to be really good soldiers, and a lot of the previous fears were not really warranted.
The soldiers also really humanize the horrors of war as they're talking about the experiences that they've gone through, the battles that they've fought, as well as some of the experiences in hospitals and even in prisoner camps.
Right. They weren't just numbers. You know, I think about this one letter where a soldier who was trying to travel through the South wrote to his father and, you know, writing, I'm thankful I'm alive yet and can write to you a few lines. You know, imagine being a father at home receiving that letter, or how many times soldiers wrote, you know, by grace I've been spared to write you a letter. There does seem to be almost like a caricature or a cartoon of, you know, this is what a soldier was like, this is what a freed slave was like. And, you know, when you start reading their own words and hearing their stories, they aren't very different from us. You know, they worried about where their next meal was coming from. You know, they had to pass the time by putting on plays and whatnot when in camp. It really removes the distance between us, which I think is, you know, especially in an episode in our history like the Civil War, where, you know, it still fascinates us so many years later. I think this is a really powerful way to connect us with the war, by connecting us with real people, you know, people with names and families and pretty intense stories sometimes as well.
Well, John Zim, thank you so much for coming on the show and telling us about this wicked rebellion.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
John Zim is editor of the new book, This Wicked Rebellion, Wisconsin Civil War Soldiers Write Home, published by the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. Zim has also written on a variety of topics for the Wisconsin Magazine of History. He spoke with Stephanie Lecce from Madison. One last break, and when we return, some insight into what it takes to breed a champion racehorse. This is Lake Effect from WUWM.